Yep.
Every hour on the hour, the Major League theme, man. It's got to happen. The Leafs with a very impressive win last night, 8-3 over the Colorado Avalanche. Johan Jerry Johansson in net for the Avs. He's going again tonight. They believe he's going to have to play again tonight in Montreal.
Well, he has to. They don't have anybody. Darcy Kuemper comes up with the upper body injury after morning skate. They have no depth. Freddie Frances is just coming back off of injury, and they've got
him still around.
Yeah, he was on a 2-year deal.
I think Freddie Frances and Jerry Johansson.
Yeah, I mean, that's honestly, if you're looking at that team, they traded for Kuemper, who's a really good goaltender. But if he's not available, you're one, tweak away from things going south. Like, I would think at the deadline, again, Joe Sakic could be like, I need to add to my depth of goaltending.
Song every year, is it not?
If they had to put anybody in there to make a save in the bubble, they might have won a cup in the bubble.
Well,
because that team was a heater team, and it was like Freddie Francouz went in there, and he was doing the scarecrow in there, and he had issues going on.
Well, it was Michael Hutchinson. Do you remember? They were at that point. They got to Michael Hutchinson against Dallas in Game 7.
Oh, yeah, they pulled Frances.
Right, Frances got hurt. That was the thing. They went from, Grubauer to Fred. Frances is his real name, Pavel Frances.
Who cares? All I know is that guy last Freddie night, Frances. The kid from University of Toronto, he had a fear in his eyeballs.
Jet.
Jerry Jet.
Awesome name, Jet.
Yeah, what was his name again? I saw it online last night.
Jet
we'll
Anderson,
call him Jerry Jet,
Jet,
but he
Anderson.
He was... had a look in his eye of...
Well, I mean, Bednar, you can't pull the NHL-caliber goalie, but when Pierre Engvall looks like Mark Messier in 94, I'm sure you're a little bit concerned. But, hey, it was over by that point anyway. And Matthews had a hat trick last night. John Tavares had a goal and two. And the Leafs, Matthews is cooking now. Matthews is cooking. Bunting had three assists. We had Sheldon Keefe on last hour, and clearly he's happy with the current combination, and why would you not be when Kasha returns to play? But beyond that, they're in a good spot.
Those assists by Mitch Marner, I don't think if the average fan understands that is elite skill in the league above the NHL. Like, the one where he's wide open, I don't know how any team, that backhand pass right there that, he wasn't looking, that is as good as it gets. That was 99.
Both of them. Both of them, because
That was Marner, 99 stuff, man.
Yeah, Marner, for him to have the sense and the touch to put that in a position where Matthews can control it, and then for Matthews to wait out the goalie the way that he had to in order to find, the tiniest of gaps to tuck that
home. Yeah, that's big-time stuff.
That's both of them at their best, And that was what really stood out last night, is that MacKinnon and Landeskog and Rant, I thought Rantanen was really quiet. Like, they didn't match what the Leafs brought to the table.
No. Their goaltending was terrible, but they honestly looked like they had a night out the night before.
Yeah, they were not – they didn't have
they
the right
sharp,
stuff last
but,
night.
But no. The Leafs deserve credit for that, too. I was asking Sheldon. Like, there were some adjustments there that were really on display for me as far as defensive zone coverage, where it was like, okay, we know this team likes to get wheeling. Makar's behind the net in the offensive zone. Like, they move. They really rotate because I would say that's the most mobile D in the NHL, because that Bowen Byram is a hell of a player, too.
Yeah.
Gerard and, like, even Eric Johnson's a really strong skater. Mm-hmm. So, I thought the Leafs' adjustments were great going, all right, let him skate around. Like, let's sag to the middle. Let's take away lanes. Let's see what they create if they can't attack the middle and stretch you out. And that was the one thing that, Colorado can stretch teams out with the best of them because they're so active. Mm-hmm. And the Leafs do that all the time, too, where the D get going, Morgan Rielly pinches down, and it's just – that's kind of been the strength of Colorado, and I thought that was a real good adjustment there by the Leafs, where they can't really break through. And then you do break through because you are going to get looks. Campbell, I thought, made some timely saves, 4 or 5 like big, good saves where you're like, man, that's what you need at that time.
Yeah, that's what you need out of a number one. And Campbell's been really good. Then the nightcap last night, the Oilers actually had a pretty poor start. Jari had an awful night. and after I had been pumping his tires for 48 hours. But they came alive in the third. Zach Hyman has himself a hat trick last night, his first career. McDavid with 4 points. And, you know, that's what you expect. The Oilers in a tight game. They had not played the night before. They were sitting at home waiting for Pittsburgh. I think they're a better team than Pittsburgh. And we keep talking about the Leafs and where they are in the standings, points percentage-wise. The Oilers are the best team in the league for points percentage. And last night would indicate that even more, you know, the way that they performed.
If you look at Edmonton, their 5-on-5 play has gotten better. And, you know, I think they've added depth of what they needed. A guy like Zach Hyman, I keep talking about Fogle. Derek Ryan played last night. Mm-hmm. But they were missing. This is the adversity we were talking about with most teams that have been going through it. Like, they were missing 4 of their D last night, guys that play. Now, you know, it's Duncan Keith, take it or leave it. Cody Ceci in protocol. Darnell Nurse is their number one defenseman.
He's been out for a while, too.
He's been out for, you know, quite a chunk. You know, you're missing 4 of your guys, and they found a way to get it done. I thought they had a slow start. I thought Pittsburgh pushed them, but their power play is a difference maker. You know, that's the one thing. Like, I think they're rolling about 37%, even if they drop down to 30%. Like, that's a
– Oh, they're lapping the field right now.
Like, it's scary on the power play.
I mean, David is an animal on the point on the score sheet. He's just – he is just outrageous what he does night in and night out. It's crazy.
Well, a 4.9, I believe he had last night.
He did, right? And I thought he could have had more. Like, he had a partial breakaway where he tried to go back to the defender instead of just using his speed. Like, it was almost like I'm going to try this to see if, you know, this works type of thing. That pass to Bouchard on the back door was a beauty on that 2-on-1 too. Mm-hmm. Like, just he's got the hands, he's got it going.
He's cooking, man. Yeah, like, and this is what you'd expect.
Two good games last night.
Yeah, this is what you'd expect, exactly. The two, you know, Canadian teams showed up. The Leafs showed up last night. The Oilers showed up last night. Both got big wins and are both moving in a very positive direction. So we'll get back into that a little bit later this afternoon. We've got Steve Sands coming up from the Bahamas. The Hero World Challenge is currently underway. Such a great handle. And Tiger Woods is out there. Striping really three woods. He had to know that someone's taking that video too, right? Like, he's not being discreet. You can't get security to just kick people off the island. Tiger's down there. He's hitting golf balls, and people are watching him do it. So we'll see what Steve Sands can tell us about that, what he makes of you know, where the tour is in early December. And our buddy Luke Wilson will join us here in a moment. And we'll ask Luke what he thinks about the game tonight, where Dallas, the number keeps moving, man. The Cowboys, last time I checked, they were a 6.5-point favorite. I believe that is still the case. 6.5 at New Orleans. Now, New Orleans,
They're missing
some big pieces. Yeah, some big pieces. Kamara's been out for a while. Ingram's been out. And you got Taysom Hill coming back. Can he take, you know, can he throw the ball 30 times, 40 times? I don't think he can. So, you know, it's going to allow Dallas to adjust their game plan defensively. Furthermore, Dallas is coming off a few losses, and they need to get going here. So it feels like a must-win for the Cowboys. So we'll see what Luke Wilson can tell us about that. And with that tremendous information, Al's brother may decide to utilize that when it comes to him making his own public announcement for his pick, which will happen in the 6 p.m. hour.
And we have decided –
So,
or here, I have decided.
Yeah. What are we doing here?
There is two different options here. To go back to Death Valley, which is Al's brother, or go with the mystery pick. I have beside me an Al's brother's hat. I will either put the hat on or toss to the side.
It's like the Lee Corso bit on Game Day when he's making his pick and he puts the mascot hat on to determine who he's taking that week.
That is how I will determine where I'm taking my talents as far as my selection.
I like that idea because I should point out I have recused myself from the mystery pick in the mystery box. I do not know who it is.
I like that.
So I'm in the dark too. I'm in the dark.
I don't believe you, but I
swear to you. I swear. I talked to the Grappler last night. Grappler said, you know what, it's probably in the – why don't you take yourself out of it? I said, that's a very good idea, Mr. Grappler. And you go ahead and do it. So the Grappler's all in here. I don't know who he's reached out to. I don't know who it is, and I don't know what the pick is. But there is video that has been taken. We talked about that also today. I said, make sure you get about a 5-10 second video announcing who it is and what their pick is. So that will be played tomorrow, regardless of what you decide to do today.
10-4. Okay? 10-4.
So we'll find that out tomorrow, and you'll have a decision to make after Al's brother makes his pick. At that point, you will make that determination. So that is going to be a big part of the program, I think, moving forward here. Joining us now on the Maple Toyota Hotline here is longtime NFL or Super Bowl champ, TSN NFL analyst, our good buddy Luke Wilson. What's happening, Luke?
Not much. How we doing?
We're doing well, man. We're talking about what feels like a must-win game tonight for the Dallas Cowboys. That said, the NFC East sucks as much as it does, and Philly's brutal, so nothing's going to really happen there. How do you think they're approaching this game with Mike McCarthy out, COVID protocols, the fact that they've been losing so many games, but they're still in a comfortable position considering the division that they play in?
Yeah, I actually think, and to be honest with you, I can't stand the Cowboys, so this is going to be a little strange for me. Mm-hmm. But I think this level of panic for the Cowboys is a little overdone. And before I say that, I don't think the Cowboys are a Super Bowl contender, at least not right now. But as far as this division goes, I would be absolutely shocked if they don't win it. And that being said, they have lost 3 of their last 4. The Bronco game was very bad. Let's just be, blunt about that. It's like they come out and smack the Falcons, which isn't saying much. And then, they have a 10-point loss to Kansas City, who is absolutely rolling right now and obviously extremely talented. And then the Thanksgiving game against the Raiders, first off, the Raiders, talent-wise, are very, very good. Imagine being in that locker room this year and trying to focus on football between, the rug stuff and the John Gruden stuff. That's crazy. Starting to get maybe in their past. But I don't think in that game it's so many penalties, so I know I'm getting a little long-winded here because I don't even like giving the Cowboys compliments. But I think they're going to be fine tonight. I think with the injuries the Saints have, I would be shocked if the Cowboys don't come out and handle business here, because the last 2 losses, in my opinion, are not bad losses. They lost to good teams, and they played them both tough.
Well, I hope you're wrong, because I'm with you. I have no interest in the Cowboys getting cooking here, but I think you probably are. And I also don't have any faith in New Orleans, and specifically Taysom Hill. And I'm curious what a football player like yourself thinks about Taysom Hill, who's made more guaranteed money than 95% of players in NFL history. And I don't know what the hell he does. I don't know if he's a quarterback. Is he an H-back? Is he a decoy? What is he? What the hell is Taysom Hill? What do you expect tonight?
So, I'll be honest with you. With the Taysom Hill stuff, it's kind of fun. He's kind of like that utility infielder in the major leagues,
Right.
You don't know what's going on, where he's playing. I respect the hell out of the guy in the sense of he just is kind of the jack of all trades and really does everything he plays decently well. I guess where the limitation is, in my head, is at quarterback, I do think that there are some limitations. And once teams kind of crack that code, so to speak, the quarterback position, you've got to be very, very easy to adjust and a lot of, very fluid in your game and how you approach each game. And I think with him, he just hasn't spent enough time there. So I got a feeling that the Cowboys, Dan Quinn, that D coordinator, that other than last week, their defense has been solid. I got a feeling that they're going to be really ready to rumble and kind of silence a lot of the haters out there like myself.
Luke, what's going on with your old team out in Seattle? It's kind of messy. How do you think things play out there? How does that end in Seattle?
Not well, I'll tell you that.
No.
Describe. Describe.
Yeah, it's kind of tough for me to watch because, although I might not have been a Pro Bowl guy, when you spend 7 seasons in one place, you kind of felt I felt personally I was a guy that really helped, continue that culture and maybe help build it a bit. And to just see kind of this fall from grace that as fast as it's been, it's tough for me to watch, but I have my own opinion about this, and I think that it's one of the most underrated things across all pro sports, and that is the idea that you need players that might not be household names, might not have a social media presence, but are just good football players, or if you're in another sport, good hockey or good baseball players. And what I mean by that is my rookie year, you know, we had all these studs. That was the Legion of Boom years. You know, we had a ton of guys that are legitimately going to the Hall of Fame, at least three, maybe four. And, now I said maybe five. And, you know, our pregame speeches were given by our kind of 3-4 defensive end named Red Bryant. And Red was a veteran guy, went to A&M, like an old-school football player. And it was like that was the guy that maybe not the media went to, maybe not the fans looked up to, but in the locker room, he was our guy. And that role is hard to quantify, but the you know that me in my opinion, being in a locker room my whole life, it just means so much. And I think that Seattle's kind of lost that. You know, they have a lot of big name guys, some of them younger now. They don't really have like a ton of, you know, veteran players who have been there and are not, you know, focused on themselves or focused on the team. And you see it in their play. And it's like, you know, here's a quick one for you. This wasn't red, but the year into the Super Bowl, we showed up on the Sunday before the Super Bowl, and we had a practice on the Monday. And back then, Tuesday was the media day. I think it's changed since then. But so we have this kind of like, hey, we land Monday or Sunday late, shake the legs off. We're just going to do a very, like, we called it a bonus day. So Monday was like, let's call it an hour, hour and a half practice. Decent, you know, we're working a decent clip here. But it's mainly like a lot of like Seattle versus Seattle defense, not a ton of scripted scout team cards, just to shake the rust off, you know, keep us focused in day. In practice, there's been a couple articles about it, but practice has gotten in. That one got pretty intense. You know, that team was pretty ferocious. But I remember sitting on the sideline, and we had a guy on offense that was kind of, you know, messing around a little bit, joking around. Easy to do if you're, you know, on a Monday on a practice that maybe won't, you know, translate to the game.
Sure.
But we had a veteran guy come up. I'll never forget this because it was right beside me. Not a household name guy. He was a D lineman. Played kind of rotationally, but was a big part of that defense. Went up to him and basically threatened to fight him. He said there was a lot more profanity I'm not going to say on here. And was like, listen, man, this is might be my only shot in this league to win a Super Bowl. I've been banging around for, you know, X amount of years, and this is it for me. So you better stop laughing, stop joking around, and, like, focus in, or else I'm going to, you know,
kick your
whatever
ass.
Whatever. Exactly. I don't know what's allowed to say on radio or not.
Dude, you can again, say whatever you want. We don't care.
Okay. You better be careful with that.
Yeah, no kidding.
So a fresh 24 years old, literally, that's how old I was. I just turned 24. I remember being like, I mean, that'll lock you in, this guy. And that's what I think is going on in Seattle right now is they don't have that guy. Where the teams where we went 13-3, 12-4, you had your just blue-collar grinder football player who is an absolute stud on the field, well-respected in the locker room, and really put the team in front of him, you know, and was not in the Pro Bowl and was not a Pro Bowl voting guy. And to me, and I know I'm going on a rant here, guys, but to me it's like you still need a core group of players like that if you want to have a 17-game season where you win and you go on the road and you win road games and you win the big games. They're just mature. They hold the locker room in check. They come out and they perform on game day. It's just a sure thing. You know, then you sprinkle in the stars. And I think we're kind of seeing that in Seattle is that there's really no clear-cut leader there, and you're seeing it. Their details are poor. They're making a lot of mistakes they normally don't make, and it's an accountability thing.
With Luke Wilson, I'm always curious what happens if the challenge is accepted, you know, from the guy being a punk. He's like, yeah. No, I'm not going to stop laughing. And if you want to dance, let's go. Like, what happened? How did the rest of the boys respond if that actually ends up happening?
I mean,
happening?
He gets knocked out, man. Yeah. I know it sounds like, yo, like, that was one thing with the NFL that I appreciated. was like, I don't know if you want to call it toxic masculinity. I don't know what you want to call it. But, I mean, you're talking at an all-time high here. And it was like, that's the way it goes. Like, you, even in practice, I mean, it was not uncommon for fights to break out in practice all the time. In fact, the one year I think we got suspended from OTAs, which was kind of was like bittersweet because we were hyped that we got a week off. But, I mean, it was like, yo, you go too hard, or you take a cheap shot, or whatever. I mean, I had one time, and he's my friend. I mean, we're buddies now, but I had a chip on a D end and then ran just a drag shallow route across the field. And it was actually going into a Super Bowl. I can't remember if it was my first or second. And it was Bruce Irving. And I didn't mean to chip him hard, but I kind of caught him in between steps. And it was not a hard chip, in my opinion. He would disagree, but he tripped. And I don't want to make it sound like I blasted him because I didn't. But he tripped and fell over, and I'm like, damn, as soon as I did it, I'm like, oh, no. Like, that was kind of messed up. And I just kept running my route. I'm like, oh, I wonder how Bruce is going to feel about this. I didn't get the ball in the route. And when I turned around, he had actually got up and had chased me. So instead of instead of going out to the quarterback, he had chased me on my route. And I was met – I had a helmet on, but I was met with like a – you know that scene out of Troy when Brad Pitt kind of jumps and stabs the guy in the neck?
Yes.
I was met with like this jumping punch to my helmet, which again, when you have a helmet on, it's all good. And I grew up in – Sal, Ontario, playing hockey, so a lot of helmets and gloves when you're 7 years old, you're prepared for this stuff. But I mean, that's how it is. Like, it's not a talking sport, like, oh, I'm going to fight you. It's like, dudes fight, and you got to be ready. Like, you stepped across the line, dudes are going to fight. And that's not a joke.
Bruce Irving.
I mean, it just is what it is. I'm laughing about it, but I'm like thinking about fights in my head right now, and it's like, I mean, we've had locker room fights. We've had fights with, like, we had borderline fights with trainers, doctor arguments. Trainer. Like, and it's like, yo.
What's a trainer doing in there?
Like, doesn't a trainer know when to walk away and not screw
and
with a professional
football
player?
And that's the thing. Usually the trainers stop before it gets there. But there's been times where it's like, and part of it is the mentality. You know, you have players, and it's been weird being retired in the sense, just because – you like I'm used to waking up and it's like you're salivating at the mouth. You walk in that building, and Pete was the best at this. Whereas like he created this environment where it's so competitive but also so enjoyable that it was like, man, it's just a ferocious energy of like wanting to personally get better and wanting to get like better as a team. And then all of a sudden it's like you get guys on edge, man, and you cross that line and it's like, you know, we were animals, dude. Like, fights are going to break out. It's going to happen. And you get over it.
There should be a line, though. I just, I get it. Players, you know, coaches, but like the trainer, like I know it. Trainers are very important, believe me. You know, in hockey, they are too. But it's just, there should be a line where it's like, okay, the trainer should know not to press a button with a guy instead of digging in. And now all of a sudden, you got to rough him up.
Yeah. I mean, it's one of those things where. I had one situation. I'm going to leave the names out of this one, but I had one situation in Oakland where a player was on a snap count for practice. And the issue was the snap count, you know, those can be misleading in a sense of I could go out there and take 30 snaps, but if I'm not doing anything, like if I'm backside cutoffs on run plays, you know, versus if I'm running 30 seam routes, my level of fatigue is going to be very, very different. So Gruden, who was calling our offense at the time, was noticing when this specific individual, and I'll let you imagine who it was. Okay, I'm sure you'd be able to figure it out.
Yeah.
But
is he suspended today?
Yeah. No comment.
Okay, continue.
No comment.
All right.
So Gruden was basically like, okay, if I only got a certain amount of snaps with him every time he's in there, I'm going to make sure that he's the first read and he's doing all the stuff. Like, we're not wasting any of these snaps. So we got a little tired. And now this was unprovoked, but he basically was a little tired and frustrated and just snapped at the strength coach. Was like, bro, you're supposed to be on the snap count. Like, and the strength coach is literally doing his job. But he's like, dude, I am on the snap count. Like, I've got it all here. You're within the range. And, like, that, I almost thought that one was coming to blows.
Wow. The snap count.
So, I mean, it gets like that. Yeah. And then there are the times just now that we're on the fighting ordeal. But I did feel like when I was in Detroit, we did the joint. Seattle, we never did the joint practices. Mainly because I know Pete knows that the way he had us all wound up, we would brawl every time. I knew just the way that team was. It would be like 10 minutes in, there'd be a fight.
Do you ever have to, like, in your normal life, do you ever say to yourself, like, to get back into football mode, if, like, your order's late at a takeout place, you just want to get in somebody's grill and be like, what's up?
I mean, there's been a few times where it's crossed my mind. I'm not going to lie to you.
Prepping for the season.
Yeah, but
man. The
joint practice always cracked me up because you'll see every year, you guys see it, I'm like, oh, a big brawl broke out. And next year when there's camp and there's a joint practice and some brawl breaks out, see if you can find out what part of practice it is. And I'd say 80 to 90% of the time, it's usually with like 15 to 20 minutes left. Because wherever they're at, it's hot as hell, and no one wants to be out there anymore. You've been out there for 3 hours, and it's like, yo, we start this brawl, this practice is over.
Right.
So, and it goes down. It's almost like an unwritten rule. Like, if you're going to brawl, let's get our work in, and the coaches will call up 20 minutes late. You know, and that's how it goes.
I love it. I love it, man. We'll be tracking that. I mean, we still got a ways to go before we get to camp next year, but it's going to be a fun week. Big one tonight. Big one all weekend. Enjoy it, buddy. We'll do it again this time next week.
All right, appreciate it. Talk soon.
There's our good buddy Luke Wilson, one of our favorites at TSN.
Dude, I love that guy. I love that guy.
He's so good.
He takes us inside the ropes, and some people might not want to hear it. I don't know. But if you're a sports fan, that's like inside the locker room stuff. Man, it's good stuff.
The best. Yeah. I mean, we can break down X's and O's of the, you know, what are the Tennessee Titans going to do this weekend? But I'd prefer to hear about brawls in Oakland and Detroit and Seattle and Bruce Irvin trying to kill him after a
chop and a straight shooter. It's like, what's up in Seattle? And he'll come with the goods. He's like, it's his team.
Yeah. Exactly.
He's not afraid to just say they stink.
Yep. And they do. They absolutely do right now. Our buddy Steve Sands coming up. He's down in the Bahamas. We'll ask him about what the word is around these tour players when it comes to Tiger. Does he feel like he's on the verge of a comeback? And how good could he be? That and more coming up with Sansy. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on TSN 4. All right, so the Hero World Challenge is officially underway, and the first round is in the books down in Albany, Bahamas. Course looks so good. The yachts, like, I love the Golf Channel showing those yachts.
You, Florida's out, Bahamas is in. We got to have Sansy. I think I saw Sansy on an Alien Wedge commercial yesterday.
I think I did, too. It's a players club. It's a players club. Here's our boy from the Golf Channel, Steve Sands. What's happening, Steve?
That would fall under the category, fellas, of college doesn't pay for itself.
That's right. That's right. Whatever gets it to the hole, man.
Who is the Alien Wedge geared for, Sansy?
The Alien Wedge is geared for every single human being you've ever met in your entire life.
That's right.
It's for those of us who have a hard time chipping and pitching around the greens, man.
I could use one, believe me. If you've ever seen me play, I slash it around. Yeah, but
believe me, if it helps you get the ball in the hole, I don't care what the club is, I don't care what the company is, do it.
I agree with you, man. I agree with you. And I saw your opening today, you and Faraday, you're like, someone's got to be down here, you know. Someone's got to be down here covering. I'm like, you guys, I can't believe it. We're up here. It's raining in Toronto. It's cold. Golf's been shut down for a month. Track looks good. It's such a great field, though. The Hero World Challenge, such a great field. McIlroy 6-under, Berger 6-under, Answer 6-under. I don't know if you can compare this to majors or, you know, WGCs or the players or whatever, but it's such a unique field, unique event. How does it stack up for you?
Well, first of all, when my man Keith called or texted actually and said, hey, do you have time at 5:30 Eastern after the show to come on with you guys? That's why we opened the show that way. I said, David, make sure you say something that makes fun of the weather in Toronto right now while we're here in the Bahamas.
Exactly.
Having a good time. You know, look, let's keep it in its proper context. It's December golf. There's no debate on the time of year and the event. However, I will say this. December golf has become more important because of this wraparound season, because people are playing 12 months a year. They're not playing as often this time of year as they usually do in the regular part of the season. But when you have 20 guys, 17 of them are in the top 25 in the official world golf ranking. Only one guy in the field, and he's the defending champion, Henrik Stenson, is outside the top 50 in the official world golf ranking. These guys are competitors, and when they put the peg in the ground, they want to win. And when they see the competition around them, it jacks them up even more. So, look, they're all here to kiss the ring and pay homage to Tiger. It's his event. The TGR Foundation is the beneficiary of the charitable dollars here. So it's great to see the best players in the world play against each other. I don't care what event it is, but this field would stack up against a top 10 field on the PGA Tour as far as depth. It's for really sure. good.
Sanzi, would any of the guys kind of, I know you said it's December, there's probably a lot of change for first place, but would guys like let loose and maybe go out at night and have a bit of a time, or would it just be business as usual?
I think that evening activities are abundant for some guys. Look, you guys ever been to the Bahamas?
Yes, never. Casinos everywhere. Oh, yes. On every corner.
Casinos, sports books, great restaurants. I'm not a big nightclub guy. I'm an old man. But if you choose to go that route, I don't think any of the players are. But certainly blackjack and craps and, great restaurants. And I'm sure some beverages get thrown down as well. So, in fact, I was talking to Keith. He's like, hey, do you have enough time to, chat for 10 or 12 minutes? I said, I got all the time in the world. Up until 7 o'clock, I'm doing nothing until I go down to the sports book to watch the Caps play the Blackhawks tonight.
Absolutely. Sanzi, have you ever seen one guy in your time covering golf? Like, have you ever had the movie scenario where you saw a player who was just buckled somewhere that didn't know you were seeing him and then saw him the next day just go out and dial in a 64?
I mean, I don't put any, I don't know about you guys. I'm such a big sports fan. I'm amazed at greatness. I just find greatness in any facet of life just fascinating. And I think that these guys, because we play the game. Someone once told me when I got the job doing golf, because I came from doing all other sports, when I got the job doing golf, that you'd be amazed at how extraordinary they are at what they do and how ordinary people they are, because their upbringing is different. It's like hockey players are always the best athletes to chat with and hang out with and have beers with. Golf guys are good dudes, man. They're smart guys. They're nice guys. And my God, they're great. So whenever anybody, they're so great. And we play the sport they play. Some of us play high school hockey or college hockey if you're lucky up there, or football or basketball, whatever. But we don't play it anymore when you get older. We play golf all the way, and to watch these guys do what they do, when they drop 64s, man, it's just remarkable how good they are. It really is.
We're chatting with Steve Sands of the Golf Channel. Sands down in the Bahamas. The Hero World Challenge is officially underway today. It is Tiger Woods' event. Tiger was there, and he obviously created quite a storm earlier this week when he posted a video of him shooting, taking 8-irons. I think he had an 8-iron somewhere down in Florida. And then yesterday, another viral video gets out where it looked like he had a 3-wood in his hand, and he looks good, man. I mean, we're breaking down a 3-wood from 50 feet over the course of 3 or 4 seconds, but that's what we have in terms of analyzing where Tiger Woods is at. It appeared to me from afar, watching him, listening to him, he's uncertain about his future. I think he might be underselling and hoping to over-deliver. What is the buzz around the tour? What's the buzz around the players, Steve, when it comes to Tiger and what they believe is possible with his playing future?
I think anything's possible because he's Tiger. And who are we to ever doubt that he's going to ever do anything in his life and in his career? I think most of the guys understand, especially the ones who know him the best, who have seen him a lot, they understand, is that swing speed enough? Does he have the power on the right side? Mm-hmm. If you think of it as a Blue Jays pitcher, you think of the arms, but the legs are what really generates the power. They have magical arms, obviously, because they can just, they have fire hoses, but they have to have that power from the lower half of their body. So does Tiger, so do golfers. And I think the golfers understand that unless he gets the swing speed back and the strength and endurance in that right leg, especially as a right-handed golfer, it doesn't really matter, but especially as a right-handed golfer, he's not going to be able to compete at the highest level on golf courses this long that they play on the PGA Tour. But if anybody could do it, it's him. And only he will know, and some of his closest peers, like a Justin Thomas, who's a real good friend who lives nearby and sees him and plays with him a lot, whether he's shooting low enough numbers at home. He said something interesting the other day. I don't know if you heard the interview, but when we chatted with him, he said something that I had never heard him really say before. But 3 years ago when he came back from his last, you know, back operation, before he won the Tour Championship with his 80th win and then won the Masters and then won the Zozo Championship to tie Sam Snead for the all-time record. Before that comeback, he said that he knew he was ready to play again because he was shooting 60s at home with relative ease, rounds in the 60s with relative ease. So only he's going to know that this time around. But, you know, he could play in the PNC Championship in 2 weeks with his son Charlie, which he did last year. He doesn't have to drive the ball there, and you get a golf cart there. So I think it's a 50-50 shot, maybe even better than 50-50, that he competes in 2 weeks with his son Charlie in Orlando at the PNC Championship because of the length of the golf course. It's way, way shorter, like 6,100 yards kind of thing, and you get to drive a golf cart. So who knows? The PGA Tour golf, major championship golf, man, those are some big ballparks for him right now. But, you know, I would never put anything past him.
Sanzi, some media down there, they wanted to know more about what actually happened when he got into the car accident. Do you? And I think that was just told to look at the police report. Do you think that's fair that people in the media would want to know more about that, or is that just leave that alone, none of your business?
You know, I am not one to ever tell any other person how to do their job. I think it's fair game. Tiger is a public figure, beyond belief public figure, and got into a public car accident. But the details are in the investigation. The L.A. County Sheriff decided to do what he decided to do. And all that stuff is fair. You know, I've never thought the questions are unfair to athletes. I think that they can always direct the narrative and always, you know, have the ability to answer anything however they wish. He was asked point blank by a very good writer named Mark Canizero from the New York Post, who's a well-respected writer, and people know him. He's a really, really good guy. It's a fair question. Hey, what happened to the accident? And he said, he didn't even say, I don't remember. He just said the details were in the investigation. So he can answer any way he wishes, but I think it's a fair question, don't you guys? I mean, I don't know. I mean, I have no problem. I have no problem with that.
Well, and I also think that it's not a court of law where Tiger has to answer either.
You know, correct.
If he doesn't want to answer, then he's not going to answer. But
I think he understands that. You know, he knows Mark. You know, Mark is not a gotcha kind of guy. Mark's a fair reporter, fair writer, and a really, really nice guy. And it's a question that had to be asked. Look, when we were lucky enough, he was lucky enough, I was lucky enough, or not me personally, but we were lucky enough at the Golf Channel on NBC that he agreed to do a one-on-one. I did it on Tuesday morning with him. And we didn't have any restrictions. You know, we wouldn't have done the interview if that were the case. I mean, I chatted with him for a few minutes before the interview, chatted with a few minutes after the interview, and during the interview while we were on camera, if I wanted to, I could have said to him, hey, what do you remember about the accident? I'm just not a believer after hearing it in the news conference from Canizero's question from the New York Post when he answered the details were in the investigation. That was a very, you know, kind of a short, curt answer, which is fine by me, but that's how he answered it. I don't think that there's any reason personally, I don't know about you guys, but in a journalistic sense, I mean, I'm just a sportscaster, but in a journalistic sense, if you're going to ask a question like that knowing that there's not going to be an answer, you're just asking it to be a hero.
Right.
And I think that's just wrong. And I thought the question was asked fairly in the news conference. If you're going to ask him that in live TV afterwards, then you're just trying to be a hero, and that's no way to conduct an interview or conversation with an athlete, in my opinion. I just don't think that's fair.
Yeah, you know exactly. You're doing it because you feel like you got to be the story, and I have to ask.
Yeah.
You know exactly what the answer is going to be.
Totally. Totally.
Well,
agree.
Enjoy yourself down there, Sanzi. Your boy Alex Ovechkin. We'll he's try. Turning back the clocks, man. This guy, he might.
Fellas,
I think,
fellas, what are we watching here with eight? Are you kidding me with this guy?
It's incredible. Yeah. It's incredible.
Unbelievable.
He's probably the hard favorite right now, or close to. He's right there with McDavid and Draisaitl for sure.
I'll tell you that McDavid. I watched that game last night. My God, that McDavid can play.
Yeah, pretty good.
Ovechkin. I mean, I don't know how quickly you guys got to get out of here, but honestly, you guys know way more about hockey than me. I'm just a big fan, but like, are we seeing something that we've never seen before with his size, his speed, his ability, his shot making, the speed at which he is still able to generate off a slap shot, and at his age, I mean, I feel like we're watching. If he stays healthy, I actually think he's got a legitimate shot at this thing. It's crazy. Yeah,
I agree with you.
He does. He's got 749 goals. Like, it's unbelievable. Like, his longevity, everything that he does. Like, that's the part, half the battle, is he's going to score consistently when he plays. But the fact that he's just played every night and plays well, like, it's unbelievable.
At 36.
What he's
doing. 36. Like, you think of,
at 36. I totally agree. That is what makes it remarkable. And if he stays healthy, you know, let's wait and see how it all plays out. One of the things I think is really cool in this pursuit is, and I'm sure you guys will deal with this over the next few years if he stays healthy, but with the Barry Bonds craziness in baseball, 755 was such a huge number in sports that it's no longer because of what happened with all of that craziness. I don't even know how many home runs he ended up hitting with the record. 18 is a huge number in sports because of Jack and Tiger trying to reach that. I think that Gretzky's goal record is going to be that way if Ovechkin continues on this pace. And Gretzky has been so gracious about it, as you know he would be. He said two things that are amazing to me. One is, he wants him to break the record because he wants to see it because he understands how great it would be for the game. I don't know if I believe him on that. I love Wayne, but who wants a record broken, really, in private? But the second thing he said was, it's harder to score goals now than when he scored goals.
No kidding.
And right. The fact that Ovechkin's doing it is, I mean, that 749 could be 850 in his era already, you know, goals were scored back then versus now. So, I don't know, man. I find it. I know he's my guy and he's my team, but I just find it just incredible what he's doing.
No, you're not alone. I don't. Anyone that appreciates athleticism, sports, let alone hockey, has to have an appreciation for it. It's just incredible what he's doing, and we'll see what he's got in store tonight. Enjoy yourself down there in the Bahamas, buddy. We'll do it again soon. Thank you for this.
Oh, anytime, fellas. Anytime for you guys. Take care.
There's our buddy Steve Sands from the Golf Channel. Yeah, the fact that Ovi's doing it at 36, like, when I think of the last 30 years, like, just monsters who can affect the game based on their presence alone. Yeah. You think Lindros, you think Lemieux, like 6'5", 230, shoot right, can do everything. By the time they hit 36, it was over. Like,
bodies,
they weren't even playing.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, and Ovi, look what this guy's doing right now. He's up for the heart. He's up for the rocket. Plays with energy, throws his body around. It's crazy, man.
Well, and his team is good too. That's the thing. It's not, he's not, you know, he's not on a bottom feeder team. It's the only storyline. Like, Washington's a really good team right now, you know.
Yeah, and he'll be third by the end of the year if he's healthy. He's going to pass Jágr, clearly.
Yeah.
So it's going to be Howe and it's going to be Gretzky by the beginning of next season, which is incredible. Yeah. Raptors in action tonight. Milwaukee in town. It looks like Gary Trent Jr. will make his return. So we'll get into that in the next hour. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and the TSN app. All right, we will revisit our conversation with Sheldon Keefe into the next hour. And Al's brother will be in with his tremendous information. There it is, the Team Al Dog hat up on TSN 4. It's a glorious-looking hat. And if the hat goes on,
it's going to be like this or like this.
Yeah, it's one or the other. If it goes on, you're sticking with Al's brother's pick. If you do not put on the hat, that means you're taking the mystery box, the mystery pick, and you will not know who made the pick or what the pick is until tomorrow on the show. So you'll be going into the game blind tonight. Dallas lands 6.5. We have a pair of tickets to give away. Leafs take it on Tampa Thursday, December 9th. Every day this week, we will provide the clue to the identity of a current or ex-Maple Leaf player. And tomorrow, you'll have a chance to call in and name that Leaf. Today's clue, the fourth of the week. This Maple Leaf was a seventh-round pick of the Maple Leafs. This Maple Leaf was a seventh-round pick. I know exactly who it is.
Cabernet.
Oh.
Now I know who it is. I had a feeling yesterday. When I heard the clue yesterday, I said, I think I know who it is, and now I most certainly know who it is.
Cabernet was a seventh-round pick. That's all I'm going to say.
I think he was Sweden. Later than that, and he wasn't born in Sweden, though. He's Czech,
no.
Is he not?
I'm sorry, isn't he Czech?
Yeah, I think he's from the Czech Republic.
Yeah, Cabernet. You're right, Cabernet.
Rick Hoagland.
No.
Oh.
No, I don't. Well, it could be. Yeah, it could be. It could be. I think I know who this is, though. All right, Al's brother will be revealing his tremendous information. We'll revisit our conversation with the head coach of the Maple Leafs as well in the final hour and tee up the Raptors and Bucks tonight. Overdrive continues, TSN 1050 and on the TSN app.